Welcome to another edition of the catchily named Podcast That Is Not A Podcast podcast, and it's come to you slightly later this week because I've been working on a weekend. And after a real-life Formula One driver last week, this show features a just-as-real team boss. It's none other than McLaren Racing CEO Zak Brown to talk about F1 politics, McLaren's IndyCar status, and all sorts of topics that you want to ask him. Zak, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast that is not a podcast podcast, and on a Saturday, so you don't even take a day off during lockdown. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, except normally Saturday's qualifying, so I'm preparing for getting back to work on Saturdays.
I was going to say, we'd be in Zandvoort right now, wouldn't we?
We would be in Zandvoort right now. I think we'd be on pole, and no one's ever going to be able to prove me wrong.
Right, that's the title of this piece already. Now, I can see you're taking it professionally because I make sure everyone has a drink on this show. I've got a beer and you've gone for water because it's qualifying day.
Because it's qualifying day. I can't drink and race. And I'm on a diet. So beer is not very good for that.
Okay. Well, there's actually questions about your diet later from fans. But before we get to the fan questions, because for this podcast, I don't tell anyone any questions in advance and you're no different. But the first few are from me because... there's been a lot going on in Formula One recently, and it's not every day you get to a bit of time with a team boss. So you've been really punchy, actually, over the past week or so regarding some of the matters within Formula One and what's been going on, particularly things like Mattia Binotto's stance on budget caps and just the way that Formula One should approach this crisis. So what's been really frustrating you at the moment?
Well, I think what's frustrating me is we have the ability to not only survive in these times, but ultimately come out and thrive. And the sport has been out of balance, really forever. And things don't go on forever if you have a we're too big to fail mentality. And so maybe because I've been around the sport for so long before running a team that I have a bit of a put the sport first mindset. And I think there's a real opportunity here to level the playing field, which is what the fans want. And not only level the playing field, making sure all the players can play, because it's tough times. And while the wealth on the grid is kind of strong as ever, I think the people that own teams, if they feel they don't have a shot at being competitive, then why are they in the sport? And I think there's a couple teams that can afford this crisis more than others, but I think they run a real risk of, at the extreme, putting the sport out of business. And so it's very frustrating to see that they don't see the bigger picture, that, you know, we can make the pie bigger, and maybe they have a slightly smaller piece of the pie, but the pie is a lot bigger than having the entire pie when the pie might be real small if we keep up our old habits.
Yeah, I know you were very outspoken about a week ago. Has there been any progress over the last week behind closed doors? Any more meetings going on?
I'm very optimistic. I think the FIA and Formula One recognize the situation we're in and are pushing very hard to get the budget cap down in the neighborhood in which the majority of the teams need it to be to operate. So I think they recognize the issue. And I've been really, really happy with how hard they've been pushing. So, you know, you see the FIA at the World Council meeting last week put through a special circumstances vote to be able to lower the threshold. And I think that's all them looking to push through what is the right level of spend for the sport to make sure we have a sport coming out of this. And then I believe the sport's going to be healthier, which will be a better product for fans.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to get to a point that's typical F1 where no one's happy, but that there will be an acceptable compromise? Or is this going to go the other way where it's going to have to blow up for anything to be finalized?
No, I'm optimistic we'll land in a place where, you know, this 130, 135, I don't love that. I'd like to see it lower. Majority of the other teams would like to see it lower. Because don't forget the budget cap. We talk about 130, 140, 150. we're spending somewhere between 75 to 150 million on top of that. So that's not the budget cap. That's a part of the budget that has a budget cap. So it's still a crazy amount of money to at the end of the day, put on a great show for the fans. So I wouldn't say I'm loving 130, 135. And I know the teams that have to come down to that aren't loving it. So I think usually any good deal is a meet in the middle and everyone feels a little bit bruised. And I think that's hopefully where it will land.
Yeah. And it seems very political at the moment, though, because obviously everyone's kind of hiding away in their own bunkers because of the global situation. And I don't know if that strengthens opinions, but does it feel like the most political time you've been involved in because there's so much going on?
Yeah, it's certainly the most political since I've been involved, but, you know, I've only been involved, it's going on my fourth season. You know, I certainly was involved in the sport, but not from a team perspective back, what was it, 08, 09, when the new Concord was signed and they were talking about breakaway series. Max was talking about a budget cap of 40 million. So it was pretty intense then. So in my era, this is certainly the most political it's been, but I think we've been here before. But unfortunately, when we've been here before in the past, I don't think we've landed in a great place. And so I think we have a real opportunity here.
And how quickly does F1 need to make decisions from your point of view?
I think we need to make them now because people are making decisions. You know, we're all out of contract. So if you're going to go racing or not in 21, you need to make that decision now. So I think what we can't do, which is what historically has happened, is kick the can down the road and just hope that things get, you know, better in the future. I think we need to go now. Otherwise, people are going to make decisions based on the information they have now. And I believe if we didn't change the sport, you would see some teams exit.
Yeah. And you've got quite a unique viewpoint as a racer because you've got a foot in a number of camps. Certainly we can talk about IndyCar as well and what it's going through right now. McLaren having really entered that this year. Unfortunately not started racing yet, but how have you seen their handling of the situation, and is there anything that each category can learn from the other?
Yeah, I think, you know, Roger Penske is the right owner of IndyCar at the right time. I've got a huge amount of admiration and respect for him, as I think the entire industry has. He's been decisive in his decision making. You know, he put out a schedule early. He's had to modify it, but I think his view was, let me put a stake on the ground and show people what our intent is, and if we need to modify it due to the conditions, I think that was a good move. He's already moved around the, you know, some race venues. He's communicating very well. You know, the one thing that IndyCar doesn't have to worry about, that Formula One spends a disproportionate amount of time, is on the technical rules. So when I sit in a team boss meeting in IndyCar, they're much more swift. They're much more aligned. They just want to go racing. Roger provides great leadership. Where you get into the F1, you're arguing over technical rules the entire time, and sometimes you don't see the forest through the trees, so to speak. And so I think the simplicity of the decision making, unity of the racing teams in IndyCar is much better than in Formula One. I think you know, Formula One's very political beast, but again, we need to be careful during these times.
Yeah, and from an IndyCar perspective, though, because you're new to it full-time this year, how damaging has it been? Because you were preparing and building for that return, and then suddenly it's all had to stop.
Yeah, from our standpoint, there's been some benefit, and that benefit being we were trying to, you know, bring together McLaren and SPM while finishing a season, while starting a season, and so to... You know, we got quite a few people at McLaren dedicated to the IndyCar program, and it was, you know, tight trying to integrate them while going racing. So this pause is, it from that standpoint, from a McLaren SPM technical collaboration integration, it's actually been a good thing. I would say that relationship is much further along now, because we've been able to focus on it versus, hey, let's integrate you, but I also got to have one eye on going racing. So our sponsor partners, Aero and BAT and Automation Anywhere, Lucas, they've all been great. You know, we've got Fernando on board, probably gives us a little bit more time to prepare for Indy. So other than our desire to go racing and our frustration that we're all sitting at home, I actually think this pause button that we've hit from our standpoint has been a positive because of how much newness there was to the relationship. It's given some time for that to mature.
Yeah, and over in the States, NASCAR is going to be racing in 2 weeks from now. Looks like IndyCar hopefully following next month. Do you think that looks like a realistic time frame? And are you going to be watching what NASCAR does to kind of get a gauge on it?
Yeah, I think it's great that NASCAR is going, going racing, because I think once people can see that the kind of closed door racing works, I think that'll give everyone confidence. I'm not sure with Texas or some Eddie Gossage's comments about, we won't race with fans and it's on the schedule, but I'm not sure if we will. So I'm not sure where that stands. I think Road America, because it's such a big track, you could probably have fans there and because you don't really kind of sit in many grandstands, you tend to wander this 4 mile beautiful area, that you could probably have fans there and still have social distancing. So I'm ready for racing. I'm enjoying watching the esports, but I want to see the real thing too.
Yeah, there's quite a few fan questions about esports actually. We'll jump on that in a bit, but just from switching back to the F1 perspective, then that's a longer lead time before the season starts. But is there a bit of light at the end of the tunnel now for you with the fact that Ross Brawn's come out and said Austria's a real hard target and here's how we're going to do it as well?
Yeah, I think the plan they have looks, pretty achievable, realistic. We can all fly in. There's an Air Force base, military base right next to the circuit, so we can all, kind of fly in there and avoid having to go through, Heathrow and major airports, go straight to the track. I think we probably, block our own hotels. So kind of you can see how you can get in and out of there in a pretty, in a bubble-like manner, and then come back to Silverstone. Maybe you go back to Luton. Again, you avoid, Heathrow and you maybe race there twice. So I think I can see how we get those four races in. Then we go off to Hungary, and plan A is you then head to Asia, and if you find that maybe getting on planes, going over the water is too much, maybe you just stay in Europe. But I'm optimistic that we'll get in 14, 15, 16 races. I think we could do as many as 18, but I'm going to assume that there's a bump or two along the way. And would guess that maybe that's going to be over 10 or 11 circuits. And I think that would be a great season if we can pull that off.
Yeah, and looking forward to seeing your fellow team bosses when you finally get to do that.
Some of them.
Yeah, I bet. Now, which one would you say is most frustrating, though, in terms of a season not starting? Was it IndyCar because of that anticipation of returning, or was it F1 because of the momentum you built up?
Well, really both, because I love my racing. So, I'll be at one or the other. Formula One for me takes, my priority as far as, if there's two races in one weekend, it was killing me that St. Pete and Australia were the first races. I'd like to be at both, but I was in Australia, as you know. I'll do Indianapolis, waiting to see what the actual F1 schedule looks like. So, I tend to go to three quarters of the Formula One races, and then in IndyCar, I was planning on going to a, quarter of the races, and then a, getting a few sports car races in when I can. So I pretty much live at racetracks.
Yeah, I was going to say you have a heck of a busy schedule, and that is something that we do come onto with the fan questions. Now, you've mentioned the esports a little bit ago, and Lando's taken to IndyCar's esports like a duck to water with his win at COTA. So have you got the wrong drivers and the wrong teams that you're setting up?
I think Lando wants to race in both series. So yeah. He's he's the new generation driver. We're actually going to have some fun. We've put together a little esports club, and we're going to race some supercars around Silverstone. Myself, Poulter, Lando, Carlos, Oliver, Pato, Latifi, and Dario. So I've got Poulter in there to make sure there's someone I can run with. And, it should be good. It should be good fun.
Yeah, I bet. We do get onto your racing career pretty soon, actually. But sort of switching to some of these questions, we had loads coming in from Reddit. And one of the follow-up ones was based on esports, which is kind of a bit of a touchy one because it was, have you been sort of watching what your drivers are doing in terms of streaming? And does it make you nervous at all? Have you had to have any words with them about being careful that they're still representing a brand when they're out there? Because the Kyle Larson instance, the one that gets flagged up.
Yeah, the Kyle one was unfortunate. Obviously a terrible situation. I do watch, but I don't watch because I'm concerned about what they'll do. You know, we have very well-behaved racing drivers who have great personalities, and I think that comes through in their Twitch feeds and all the social media activity that they do. But, you know, fortunately, I don't have to, knock on wood, worry about any incidents like Kyle had.
Okay, well, another question is about one of your other drivers, Carlos, and it came in on Reddit. I'm going to try some of these usernames, but they're going to be terrible. I think this is Tida Sales, because it's a Spanish one, I think, but it's, are you in better shape yet than Carlos, like you said you would be soon on Drive to Survive?
Well, I haven't seen him in a while, but I'm going to guess no. I am in much better shape, but I wouldn't say I've caught Carlos yet.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you drive a lot of cars. There was actually a question, this is a legitimate question, which I wasn't going to put in, but I am. Someone asked who said he's a big guy himself and he thought he could never be a racer. And then he sees you driving some tiny little old Formula One cars. And he says, how do you do it, basically? Like, how difficult is it? Like, what's it like? And is that one of the reasons that you are now saying that you're on a diet?
Yeah, it's tight, that's for sure. Some of them are too tight, so I can't slide in all of them. The newer cars, because of the safety and you got to be able to pull the driver out with the seat, those cockpits are actually quite big. The older ones are pretty snug, but where there's a will, there's a way. And certainly being on the weight loss program has some not only health benefits, but means I can squeeze in a few more cars.
Yeah, good work. I must admit, a lot of people I think are trying to lose weight, but it's not easy in lockdown. So admire that. Another question though, coming in about your racing from Leon Professional, who says they'd just love to hear a story about a race you participated in, a great pass, a close call, off-track excursion, messing around with teammates, anything that probably people wouldn't have heard about from your time racing. So what's been your best moment behind the wheel?
I've had a few, unfortunately, just a few. But the, you know, some that stand out, I won the 2008 Montreal Grand Prix in the Ferrari Challenge, which was the Sunday before the big race, and qualified second, made a pass. You know, there's that little kink on the front straight. I got pushed onto the grass and kind of kept my foot in it, took the lead in turn one and won. And that was great because it was in front of a packed audience. And when I came down the Formula One pit lane, a lot of my Formula One buddies came out, were giving me a high five. So it was cool to win that at that event. And then Stefano Domenicali gave me the trophy on the podium. So that's certainly a race that I remember really well. I would say finishing fourth at the 24 Hours of Daytona with Martin Brundle and Mark Blundell and Mark Patterson was awesome. We were on the the lead lap and just kind of racing with Martin and Mark, who I grew up watching, you know, never thinking in a million years I'm sitting at home as a kid watching Martin Brundle that, you know, 10, 15 years later, I'm going to be racing with him. So that was pretty cool. And with my team, I've been able to race with Herbert and Johansson and Cheever. And so I've enjoyed racing against, or with, I should say, the guys there. And then, some historic stuff. I've had some good fun historic races, probably winning from pole in Mario Andretti's Formula 5000 car at Laguna Seca with a grid of about 40 cars. That was a ton of fun.
Yeah, so if Stefano Domenicali gave you the trophy on the podium and you won in a Ferrari, you've clearly had good relationships with Ferrari team bosses before. So there's potential. I wish I could vouch for some of these stories, but the only time I've seen you racing was at Laguna Seca a few summers ago. And the car let you down when you were leading, I seem to remember. It was 2017 during the August break.
Yeah, that would have been maybe my 935. I broke a gearbox.
That sounds about right, yep.
Yeah, definitely wasn't my fault.
No, no, definitely not. I could tell by the look on your face afterwards when I thought I'd come and say hi and then thought, you know what? No, I'll leave it for a few weeks. Now, speaking of the sort of crossover that you've done, actually, you've taken your love of all sorts of racing and really implanted that back in McLaren. But a question from Rorake comes in that says, would you rather win the Indy 500 with a McLaren car or finish fourth in the Constructors again with McLaren F1?
Indy 500.
Is it all about winning?
It's all about winning. If you would have said win Monaco in a McLaren F1, I would have had to give that a lot of thought. But winning the Indy 500, I mean, there's three races you want to win. It's Monaco, it's Indy, and Le Mans. So Fernando's got me all excited about my fantasy would be to be the first team boss to win the Triple Crown with McLaren. That would be pretty awesome. So hopefully I'll do it, but it could take decades.
Keep at it. You've got plenty of time ahead. But similarly, actually, then if I spin that round, what if it was a top three Constructors' Championship finish this year? That or winning the 500?
Ooh, that's close. Probably the Indy 500. You got to go with winning. You got to put me a little further up the grid. You know, if it was kind of even winning our first F1 race since 2012, ooh, that would be, I don't think I want to answer that one. Don't ask.
Well, you've already told me you can't, basically. But, I'll let you think about that one a bit longer. Another question came in from Captain Pierce 72, which says that they've been a McLaren fan since they started watching F1 from Australia 2008 and recently visited New Zealand and stopped by Bruce McLaren's Heritage Museum at Hampton Downs, and says, when everyone's gone for the night, do you ever just slow down, walk around the MTC and take in just where you are and what's come before you? And he says, you can imagine that you did that initially, but does that still happen, or is that special kind of feeling worn off?
No, it happens every day, but actually it happens in the morning because I get in early and I like to start working the phone. And usually at night I'm still flat out. So I'll come in the morning, walk onto the boulevard. And if I've got a call, I'll just kind of stream up and down the boulevard looking at the cars. So I pinch myself pretty much every day.
That's cool. It is a heck of a setup you guys have got there, I must admit. There's some really special places in Formula One, but that boulevard and that array of cars, which seems to change all the time. How do you pick which cars you put on the boulevard?
Well, that's a very important project for me that I work with Michael Edgecombe on quite a bit. It's like when you have a little Hot Wheel collection and you repark the garage all the time. I just do it with the bigger version cars now. So there's kind of one permanent setup unless we're featuring it. And we've got Bruce's McLaren's first race car. Then we kind of go to the Papaya era and his Formula One car from the British Grand Prix, Denny Holmes' championship Can-Am car, and then Johnny Rutherford's Indy winner. So I kind of like that captures, you know, that we've been in multiple disciplines. Then we move into our Le Mans era, and then we go through our kind of Lauda. Well, we've got our first, you know, we had the first carbon fiber chassis John Watson drove, so that. Then we get into the kind of Marlboro era with Nicky, Senna, Prost, like to have all the championship. Then into the West era with Mika and Kimi, and then on to the Vodafone era. With Fernando, Lewis, and Button. And it kind of works perfectly now. So when we create the next winning era, I'm not quite sure how we configure things, but that'll be a good problem to have.
Yeah, I bet. What one of the questions was from Vulcan Hulo. I'm trying to give everyone a shout out if I can. What is your favorite McLaren car from before your time at the team?
I think it has to be the MP44. That was just such a dominant, iconic race car. Senna's first championship. Senna was my favorite driver. I think aesthetically, I think the Vodafone era, those cars were spectacular. I mean, Ron had such an eye for design that you got to say, really up through the Vodafone era, I always thought the McLarens were the best looking race cars.
Yeah, they did look good. But you also have your own great collection. And ATW86 wants to know, what one car, if you had to pick one, are you hoping to add to your collection?
To add to my collection?
Because you've got a big one.
Yeah, I've got a car guy. you know what I'd like? I'd like a Schumacher car. I don't have a Schumacher car. And, you know, he was one of, if not the greatest Formula One driver, certainly statistically. We'll see if Lewis gets him. I think it's going to be close. My favorite was Senna, but Schumacher was unbelievable. And I don't have a Schumacher car, so I'd have to say a Schumacher.
There was also a follow-up that was, are you still trying to hope, still hoping to get one of the Brabham cars from Bernie? Because apparently he pushed you to buy a lot of stuff from him when you came after one of those.
Yeah, he said, I can buy one. I just got to buy the 52 others to go along with it. And that was a little bit out of my league. So, yeah, I think Bernie, it's the problem is anytime you want something from Bernie, that's the worst time to negotiate with him. He's still better than me at the negotiation game. So, I'd love to get a Brabham and love to get it directly from Bernie. Maybe a PK would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be very cool. Now, I've only got a few more, but one of the ones that came in is a question I wanted to ask, but I thought I'd let a fan sort of put it in. There was a lot asking about whether you would get involved in other categories with McLaren outside of IndyCar and Formula One because of cost saving that might be going on. But the specific one I wanted to ask about was IMSA and WEC with this LMDH formula. Is that something you're looking at?
It is something that we're looking at. So I think, you know, in an ideal world, we would that would be our motorsport portfolio, Formula One, IndyCar, and sports cars, because they all serve different purposes. They are all complementary to each other. I'm a big fan of what WEC and IMSA are doing together. But with these decisions, just like IndyCar, you know, it took me some time to get that, you know, put together and had some, you know, stops and starts and some good days and definitely some bad days, if not my worst day in racing. But, you know, you got to get back on the horse and go. And so, yeah, if I can put together a, you know, front-running, financially sustainable plan, then I think we would enter sports cars. So right now with what's going on, we've got to, you know, kind of one step at a time, you know, felt we've got our Formula One headed the right direction. Now we've just entered IndyCar. We've been waiting to see what happens with the rules on sports cars. Looks like it's going to land in the right place. I'm unsure whether it's going to be for 22 or 23, but I think once we pull through this and I feel Formula One's continuing to go the right direction under Andreas's leadership, IndyCar is going the right direction, then you know, I might get brave and start working on the next business plan.
I guess part of that is also important to have partners on board and make sure that you're hitting targets with sponsors and hitting regions with them. Couple of questions came in, one from Goji2Go that says, you haven't announced a new sponsor in the past 35 seconds. So what's up with that, basically?
We've been on a roll. They've not been quite coming every 35 seconds, but no, we've been having a lot of commercial success. I think we landed 7 new partners in the offseason, which I think's, you know, definitely more than any other team on the grid and you know, probably similar to the rest of the grid combined. And that's, you know, that's because we've got a great brand. We're headed the right direction, great drivers, and a great marketing team. And, you know, they're doing a really good job and very proud and more to come. And so we just have a lot of momentum on and off the track.
And how damaging has this situation been, though, from that perspective? Because we had someone asking, like, has it put the brakes on any sponsorship deals or sort of hampered the way that any of them have been done?
Well, it certainly put the brakes in the short term on any ongoing conversations, because everyone's had to buckle down and, you know, focus on the crisis. All of our current partners have been great. We're working with all of them to make sure that any lost value by doing fewer races, you know, we make that up to them, and they know that. That's, you know, that's a big part of my background is the commercial side. So you know, recognize the importance of sponsor partners and taking care of them. And so we have a plan with every single one on, you know, if we do 15 races, it means they've missed 7. How do we address that? And they've all been great. So we're doing good with our partners. And I think, you know, there'll be some companies that, lots of companies that are severely damaged by what's gone on. But then there'll also be some companies that are, you know, really strong based on, you know, what this has done and how it's changed habits of consumers. Airlines are probably not an industry you'd be going after at this moment, unfortunately. But, you know, if you're a, you know, e-commerce business, then you know what? Life's probably pretty good right now because people are living off the internet. So you just got to maybe redirect the industries that you pursue. And then also this will be a time where aggressive marketers can take some market share because people will tighten up the spending, but then the you know, aggressive, more bold marketers will continue to go for it.
Yeah, and you mentioned that online stuff. I'm got one more question for you before I let you go, because I know Lando is virtually racing for you at Indianapolis in about 2.5 hours, which, you know, hopefully that means you're going to get that Indy 500 win you were talking about, although we'll see how well that ages by the time I get this podcast out. But you are the boss at McLaren, but I'm going to finish off by making you boss of Formula One because of a question that came in from Flat Irving, who asks, if you could change three things, so you've got a bit of leeway, three things in F1 as a whole, what would they be?
Ooh, good question. Well, definitely budget cap.
At what number?
I'd go 125.
Okay.
Governance. You know, I think collectively the teams can't get out of their way most of the time when it comes to decision making. And so I think the people that own Formula One who, you know, want what's best for Formula One should be empowered to make more of the decisions than they are currently allowed to or can. And then I think the third, what would the third be? The third would be an all-star race with team bosses.
Oh, you're really keen for that one, aren't you? Which track? Or every weekend?
I like Silverstone. You know what? Monaco's cool. Why not? Got to give Monaco a go.
And what's everyone driving? You're the head of F1. You get to choose.
I'm in a McLaren, and with all due respect, everyone else is in a Minardi.
Oh, nice. So we're talking, it's not road cars. This is all-star racing Formula One cars.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. We got to do this the right way.
Wow. Oh, yeah. There's you in the MP44, and then you're picking the least competitive Minardi ever.
Exactly.
I like the way you're going to do that. Zach, thank you very much for your time and for coming on the show. Hopefully I'll see you at a racetrack again sometime soon. But until then, I hope you and your family and friends stay well through all of this.
Sounds good. You the same. And thank you to all you fans for hanging in there, supporting us on eSports. And we'll be back putting on a good show for you soon.
And thanks to everyone else there for listening. Check out previous episodes of the podcast that is not a podcast featuring Pierre Gasly, photographer James Moy, F1's Lawrence Barreto and ESPN's Nate Saunders on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or direct on Podbean. And for more pointless rambling, I'm on Twitter at Chris Medland F1, where new episodes are regularly flagged up. Hope you enjoyed listening. And if you didn't, don't worry, it's all over now.